Hi, and welcome to Coco Studio Podcast. I'm your host, Mohammad Azam, and as always, I'm joined with Stefan Atterheim from Germany. How are you doing, Stefan?
I'm great. Thanks, Azam. How are you?
I'm pretty good. So today we have a very exciting topic, which is earning additional revenue using iAds, IAP, and selling source code. So let's start with that. I think what people don't realize right now is that there are multiple ways of selling your product. Even on the App Store, there's a plain old way of selling your app using like 99 cent or 1.99 or putting a price tag on it. Then there's also iAds that you can put advertisement on it. And you can also put, what is that called? The in-app purchasing. So there are multiple ways of selling, and we are going to cover most of the ways of selling the products. And of course, you have also sold your products in a very different way, which is selling the source code. But let's talk about the plain old App Store's style, which is selling the app for a dollar price. So what is the first question is, I think, what is the ideal price point of an app?
Well, I think if there were an ideal price point, we would all be using it. So it's personally, I think you should not start with 99 cents because you don't have any way to make a sale at that price point, because you pretty much have to make it free to be able to make a sort of sale and push some of your push your sales. So I think unless you have a very, very simple game, it's quite reasonable to start with $1.99 or even higher, and take that down occasionally to make a sale.
Yeah, I think if you started with 99 cents, there is no way of going down, or no way of changing the price. You can only go up, which the users or your consumers won't like. So if you start with $1.99 or a little bit, $1.99 is a good way of start, especially for the educational games that you see on the App Store. Usually most of the games start with $1.99 price tag. This gives them a little bit of room to go down to 99 cent on special occasions like, Father's Day, Mother's Day, or any kind of other, like a July 4th, Independence Day, or any of those Valentine days or whatever. So you can go down to 99 cent and then come back again to 1.99.
No, I think the actual question should be, how should my app, what should my app have in order to sell it for more than 99 cents? Because I think a lot of developers believe that there are so many other similar games like mine out there, and they all cost 99 cents. No one will buy mine if I ask for $1.99. And that should actually make you think about something unique to your game. It could be the look and feel, how smooth the game is, or the app, or the user interface design, or just the number of features, anything that makes the thing complete, not complete, unique. And personally, I worked on a game. It's not really a game. It's actually more like an information app that displays funny cartoon characters with some text in three languages, descriptive languages of descriptions of Japanese characters. Actually, it's called 51 Japanese Characters, and it's never been promoted mad much. I think it's a price point of $2.99, and it brings in $50 a month. It's not much, but if you consider that the game or app was never really advertised anywhere, and it's quite surprising that it does actually sell. And the point here is that it has really nicely done graphics, and it's a unique app. You have some fun, you have cool characters, and there's nothing else like that in the App Store.
Yeah. I think one of the other problems I've also seen with the people buying on the App Store is that if I have an app that is 99 cent, they are always going to compare me against some really, really cool app like Angry Birds or the highest or anyone else, which is also 99 cents. And then they're going to say, hey, well, Angry Birds is 99 cents and it has like 100 levels, and your app is also 99 cents and it has like 5 levels. So yeah, so I think it's I don't know how to, how to clear that up, but I think it's different apps have I guess different price points, and each app serves its own purpose. Like my apps usually serve the purpose of educating Angry Birds is just like, having fun apps. It's pretty cool, but it's a different category, I guess.
And of course, if you make a very similar game like Angry Birds, you can't beat it on price, and you probably can't beat it on the gameplay or popularity. So it's probably a type of game I would stay away because it's so popular. So I'd rather make something else, unless you have a very unique clue about how to make this game very special or very different but same. I think there was a game called Fragger or something like that with grenades. It's just similar. I'm not sure if it was first or came second, but it's good enough that I guess it can ride the wave of popularity of this sort of games, because there are always people looking for similar games, and so you can take that, but you won't be able to sell it for m more than 99 cents, very likely.
Then there's another way of doing the things, which is giving the user a free, a light version, and then they can upgrade it or buy the paid app version. So what are your thoughts on that, Stefan?
Oh well, I've been following the whole debate since it started, basically, and there are some developers who say you have to have a free app, a free version of your app. Others say absolutely don't make a free version of your app, and they all have good reasons, and it all probably works for them. But the real issue here is there is no, what you call it, double blind study, where you have the same app, one with a free version and the other without the free version, because you can't do that on the App Store, because either you have it or you don't have it. So I think it's more personal preference. I don't really know what factors go into deciding what makes a free app useful, or a light version and whatnot. I think it works decently well for level-based games. But if you have to do a time limit or something like that, or limit the number of features, it'll be difficult. You basically have to design two different games at some point, and I'd rather put all my resources into just one game and skip the free version, and rather use the opportunity to occasionally set the app for free just for a day. Bring in some popularity, bring in some additional users. Not making any money on that day, but you're definitely going to be selling the game on the next couple days following that.
Let's move on to the iAd and advertising, and this is one of the things that I'm using in one of, I mean all I mean three of four of my three of my apps. ABC Pop, actually, that's it uses advertising. And what happens is that I don't know, I mean, how much how it detects. I don't know if it's click-based or it's request-based or impression-based, but it is the number of times your ad is displayed on the iPhone or iPad or wherever you're running, and then also I think you get some money for clicking, So if you have your app that is downloaded like crazy, like thousands and thousands every day, and it's free, then it might be suitable for you to make it as iAd, because when you put a price point on an app, you are kind of saying that okay, this app will not be downloaded as much as a free app. And that is what I noticed when I put the price point of 99 cent on ABC Pop, but then I when I moved it to a free app, it was downloaded like 1,000 times in a day. And then I put it like iAds on it, and it was making much more revenue than by selling the app for 99 cents.
No, oh, that's cool. I heard that the average or the the generalized free to paid app sales or downloads is like 1 to 10 or higher. So if you have a paid app for 99 cents, and one person will buy it a day, then if you make it free, 10 persons will people will download it a day. That's a pretty good factor, and I think it's probably in the lower range because there's so many people who just like to download free stuff and probably never even started. I don't know where they where they get the time to do that. But can you say how much more you made by when switching
No,
to
it's
Fired?
yeah. So when I started the app, and I can actually give out the figures, it's not a big deal. But when I started the ABC app, it was 99 cents, and I think the first day it sold 24 apps. So let's say $24 for 99 cent when it was selling. And of course, after that, the price point, I mean, the price actually went, the people were not really downloading it, and I think it got like lowered in the App Store, not the rankings, but kind of like it was not a recent app anymore, so it went down the stack. One thing I really notice is when your app gets very good reviews, which ABC Pop has, like I think it has like 4 star or 3.5, or I mean 4 star or something. Then when you make it free, then more people will actually download it. So when I made it free, I was making kind of like maybe 20, $30 a day. And that carried on for like maybe like 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And then it, of course, started dropping because, I mean, it went again down in the stack. And then currently I kind of make enough to drink a coffee. That's it.
Per day.
Per day, yes. I can drink one Starbucks coffee per day, yes.
Well, it might get you through the day.
Yes. There are a couple of things that I'd like to mention. I think it was Aaron Griffin or someone who mentioned that Apple is removing iAds from the kids' apps. And I actually commented on his blog and I said, okay, this is a very bad idea. And, I mean, maybe this should be handled by some other means, like maybe Apple can actually filter out the ads. If it's a kid app, maybe Apple can display, PBS ads or, Disney ads or something like that instead of beer ads or AT&T or, well, I'm not comparing AT&T to beer, but, something different, I guess.
You
But
think
the,
the content is the problem here?
yeah.
Because my first thought was that it's actually the user that's the problem. Because if you have let's say a 5-year-old kid or younger, and those kids they might just accidentally click on the ads, and basically their clicks have no value because the products don't get bought, the brand doesn't get transported, the kid doesn't know what he or she is doing, so that might be a problem as well. And if you consequently, if you think this further, you might want to start avoiding to use iAds in games for cats or something like that. There are apps for cats, and I mean ads for cats, that would be pretty much pointless. But sorry, I interrupted you.
No, actually, you made a good point because I was getting to that point that finally, I mean, after maybe a couple of days after my post, I gave my 7-month-old daughter my iPhone and I started the ABC Pop game and she kept on clicking on the ad and it was so annoying for me because when she clicks on the ad, it puts up that black screen with test ads are running or whatever because it's my device, not some other device. So I have to keep like taking the iPhone from her and press the cross button and then give it to her. Then I said, okay, this is ridiculous because I mean I'm spending the main reason I'm giving her my iPhone is so I can basically do something else and she can play the game. But so I finally had to turn off the wireless connection and everything so that the ads are not displayed. So I think, I think Aaron Griffin was right. I mean, or Apple is actually also right that you shouldn't display ads on kids' apps. I mean, it makes a very good revenue, but I guess, I mean, kids just click on it. I mean, they don't know what's going on.
I just had this image in my head, like a Chinese baby farm where they have iPhones for babies and they just click on ads and they make lots of money from that, like the World of Warcraft gold farmers.
So yeah, that's and if our listeners want to learn how to put iAds on a Coco Studio application, I assume that you're going to put not put it on the Kids app. So you can go to High on Coding, and I'll put a link over there on our show notes. I have a very detailed article on how to put iAds using Coco Studio. It's a little bit different if you're using interface designer or interface builder than using Coco Studio. So it's all using code that you want to put the iAds.
Yeah, and I also I'm currently writing on the Cocos 2D, mixing Cocos 2D with Coco Touch a new chapter for the book update, and iAds will also be in the book, so you'll learn how to add iAds there as well.
Cool. So let's move on to the third way, which is in-app purchases, app upgrades, add-ons, subscriptions. So what are your views on that, Stefan?
Well, I think in general, in-app purchases are a great way to enhance your app. But you have to consider there are several possibilities that you have at your disposal. You can have a free app that is upgradable to the full app via in-app purchase. You can have unlockable items that you can add to your app, which is essentially like unlocking your full version, but you can also extend it with additional content. And you can also have consumables, which are items that help the player play the game, like, give him some extra health potions, and he'll eventually use them up and will have to buy or will want to buy more of them. And this is basically the consumables are basically where that the whole web browser game and free to play game industry is basing their revenue on. And finally, you have the classic, the subscriptions, which allow you to do something like a World of Warcraft type game where you have a online subscription. You can only play while you are for the time that you paid for, and you will be automatically charged again when the time period is over. So, as far as let's start with unlocking full versions. That has some popularity, but there's an issue here because if you have a free version and you allow it to be upgraded to the full version, and you also have a separate full version app, they will be treated as two separate apps, and this might actually this lowers your chance to be in the list, for example, in the most revenues, the top 10 revenue list. And it has other drawbacks. As personally, I don't think it's a good idea to have a free app that is unlockable to the full version, unless this is your only app. Then you could do it, but I'd rather design it in a way that the user doesn't have the feeling that he's just playing a demo and unlocks the full version in order to be able to really enjoy the game. I'd rather recommend to make it a decent game, which it could be relatively short, but it should still be enjoyable for quite a while and get the player hooked. And at that point, offer more content like additional levels, extra weapons, or something like that. That could work quite well. As far as the consumables are concerned, they are, let's just say they are not very popular among some people, both on the from the players and from the developer perspective. For some players, don't mind buying items that will be used up. For them, it's a good way to advance in the game, or even a better way. Others just don't see the value in that, and some even say that it creates an unfair advantage to those who have the money to to buy those items and advance faster in the game. This is really tricky. Consumables are, we all know this, they are the backbone of the free game Facebook and web game industry, game industry, but they are actually quite hard to get right. And personally, I wouldn't try to touch them because it's very, very difficult to balance this out and make the game compelling enough that you can actually profit from those. It's probably easier and for indies better in general to rely on additional content that you pay for rather than consumables. And subscriptions, likewise, you have to have a compelling game that you need to be continually updating, that even that users are, you know, it has to have an online feature. I mean, you can't have a subscription without an online feature in games these days. So it's already a pretty complex game and probably not that interesting for indies unless you have some regular content updates. In my notes, there's magazine apps. It works quite well. And I think most indie magazines, like specifically the Indie Game Magazine, they have an app and they sell their what do you call it, the magazines. they sell them as subscription based or on a just I want just this particular magazine, so you can have both a subscription and a upgrade sort of thing. But in general, I think that the unlocking some items is the best for indies, and consumables and subscriptions are really difficult and they require a certain care, a certain amount of thought into the game design, so they're pretty hard to pull off for most developers actually.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I have a few words for the magazine subscriptions. I think this is, I mean, of course, it's not for basically for indie developers or developers who are making games, but the magazine apps or the magazine subscription on your iPad allows the use, I mean, allows the I would say the authors to easily get their message across to the users with the use of the App Store, because when you publish your magazine in the App Store, it's visible to the whole world. So it's making life of publication and as well as author very easy to get recognized. So if you have a bunch of authors, let's say in Houston, Texas, who just wants to talk about things happening in Houston, Texas and why Houston, Texas are very good, then I think they can, you know, invest in that kind of an app and kind of like you know, make a magazine like a traveler's magazine for Houston, Texas. Yeah.
Yeah. I also wanted to add that specifically for the consumable items, they are not a get-rich-quick theme. You have to have a game that's quite popular, and I think you should design or release your game and without the consumable in-app purchases. And once it gets to a certain point of popularity, you'll find ways to add some consumable item in app purchases and start experimenting with that. Mm-hmm. And if it works, you can really grow your app. So they do have some value and they are interesting, let's say, let's put it that way. But you have to have a working app and a successful app at that in the first place. So I would not plan for them right ahead. Maybe think about them in the design, but strictly release the game without any consumables and just see how the game goes. And if it becomes successful, then start thinking about adding consumables.
Another thing about IAP or in-app purchasing, we can also talk about the patent claims by Lordsys. And I know that Lordsys, a company, I think based in Texas, where basically sent out letters to the developers, usually developers who make quite a lot of revenue using the in-app purchasing model, that they want a share of that, which was like 0.5 or something around that. And because they were claiming that they sold the license to use in-app purchasing patent to Apple and not for the third-party developers. Now, Apple did finally responded to them in a letter, which is available online. We'll have a link to that letter. But then I think they started targeting Android developers, and I think they're yeah, and I think they're also they haven't stopped for I mean the Apple developers. I think they are taking them to court or something. I'm not sure what's going on. I mean, Apple did told them that the developers are actually covered under the license, but I'm not sure what's going on right now. And this kind of shows that software patterns are just, they just should not exist unless you have thought of something so completely unique, and you also have a product that you're either building or it's already in the market that exposes that particular feature that you have patented.
I went to their blog, the Lotsis blog, and they had some blog posts explaining why they're doing what they're doing and why they have to do what they do and how difficult it is to patent something like that and how important it is to well protect your patents and stuff. This is all true, but they have to see it as this is just ridiculous, and it's just for making money from people who may easily sway in and well just don't want to get into a lawsuit. But I don't think it has any grounds, and the only way it could go through court is if the court were not sure how the legal system then works. Here in Germany, the result of a lawsuit can really depend on the judge and his technical skills or his technical knowledge about how the systems work. And so if you know that you'll be fighting this over court with a judge who is not really a technical guy and who's more like on the side of the patent holders and something like that, it could actually work. But the letter that Apple sent out, that was just so wonderful. I've rarely seen a text so full of legally speak and down to earth. It's like a very serious letter, and I read it, and after that I thought to myself, they just basically said "fuck off, Lotsis," in the most absurd way possible. It's just excellent. So nice, well done, Apple, and nice read.
Yeah. Do we actually know that if that goes to court, I mean, which court it will go? I mean, will it be done in the Texas court?
I have no idea about the legal system. I know that in Germany, if there are certain circumstances where you can actually more or less select which court you will be going to if you start a lawsuit, and there are some factors which decide where this is going to be fought over in which court and which judge will be responsible. Some companies, and especially those who like to bend the law to their side, mostly the lawyers, the business savvy lawyers, they know how to pull this off, and they know where to start or where to submit those claims and get their rights there in brackets.
Yeah. Also for I mean kind of like I mean when you start patenting all this weird nonsense, then I mean if you look at the iOS 5, some of the features that they have implemented in the iOS 5 SDK, that is also questionable. I mean it's all awesome features, but now AT&T or I don't know Verizon, or they can also come forward and say, hey, what is this iMessage thing going on? Yeah, we have a patent for that. Or some other company, like a telecommunication company, can step forward and say, hey, what is this iMessage? And yeah, that is patented.
There's actually what most people don't really realize unless something like this boils up and it's directly related to their work or their daily life. Those patent claims and the lawsuits about patent claims, they are commonplace, really commonplace. I mean, I've been following the CPU design and technology stuff pretty closely for Whenever I, since I had a PC, I was very interested in CPUs, and there was always a lawsuit or patent claims from Apple, from Intel towards AMD, from AMD towards Intel, and the other CPU manufacturers and designers. And this is ridiculous, and it goes on if you look to software. Microsoft has patent claims. It's just everywhere. We just don't really see it. It's basically why most companies have a legal department, because they have probably dozens of lawsuits going on at the same time, just about some patents, and which really makes me wonder if we really need to have a patent system, because there are so many companies who use patents or probably patented processes or whatever, and they may not know. Maybe they do know, but I think that system isn't working. It's just for making money eventually. Yeah. So I'm not really surprised by companies like Lotsys trying to do the same.
Let's get on the track and let's talk about the source code. So you can actually, and you have much more experience in selling source code to the developers, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's often overlooked, but you have your game, it's in the App Store, it's finished, you make maybe $100 a month, or maybe $100 a day. Somewhere in that range, and you'd like to improve your revenue. And one thing you can do is actually say, "Okay, here's my source code, and you can have it for whatever $50, $100, $200, $400, whatever you like to charge." There's always some people who are going to buy it, and if you consider a price point like my line drawing starter kit was initially at $179, and if you make like 10 sales, you have over $1,000. And even if your app in the App Store makes maybe $100 per month, you can still make several hundreds more by selling your source code. There are some factors. You have to have decent code at least, have a game that's interesting enough for other developers to learn from. It's definitely worth looking into, because it's really easy to set up. E-commerce wise, you just hook up with some e-commerce provider, and don't worry too much about the rates they take. Somewhere between 5 to 8%. You get dozens of features and whatever, and just ignore that, and just pick whatever e-commerce provider you like and try it out and start selling something. It's really easy. I think the biggest worry by most developers is, for one, my code is basically my secret, if a company has a secret which is valuable, I think you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's essentially what you're building your value on, and what creates value for you. But that's actually not the case, because most code, many developers will be able to analyze and re-engineer your code without ever seeing it easily, if you're a decent programmer at least. Mm-hmm. So you're actually selling more to beginning developers, or those who just like to spend $100 to save a couple hours of work, or just get a working basis and get a head start. The other worry is, of course, that if you sell your source code, you'll be seeing clones of your own game, and that will cut into your revenue. So basically, you're creating your own competition. There's obviously, you can do it like I do. I don't have a line drawing game out there, so I don't worry about that at all. But I will have to look up but I think I sold over 100 copies so far, 120 or something like that. Or maybe it was 200, not sure, somewhere in that range. And there were maybe two or three games which are interesting enough, which are complete enough, which are visually up to par to most App Store games. So the ratio to from how many sales you make to actual competitive games that come out is pretty low. And all of those games are pretty unique, actually. So they have been improved. The design has changed a lot from the typical flight control type of game. So developers are actually trying to do something unique, and everyone knows that, at least those who are serious with this business. And all others, they might be releasing a clone of your game, but I shouldn't worry too much about that, because it's only going to make your version of the game look much better.
So when we talk about like selling source code, are we saying that it's what we are essentially selling is a project made in Xcode, or are we selling some sort of a starter kit which will, well, now my view of starter kit is very different, I think, because from a Microsoft background, what starter kit looks like. So can you explain, like, if your code is or how a source, just a source code, is different from a starter kit?
Well, I call it a starter kit because it was a term I knew quite well, and I thought it would be self-explanatory to most developers. But in fact, there is no definition of starter kit or game kit or whatever kit. So just it's a bit unclear. What I think a starter kit is a game that gets you over the basic hurdles of developing a game of a certain type, and it's just focused on the results, on the core aspects of the game that needs to be done. In my case, it's drawing lines and having objects follow those lines and land on certain event or trigger areas, and ideally, you would copy some elements of games that are similar, or that, in this case, I tried to copy the success messages from Flight Control, for example. And if I compare this to a game kit, and the most popular in the iPhone area is the iPhone game kit, obviously, the RPG game kit. That was used to create the Quexlore game. I think game kit to me now means that it's actually a complete game that you can start, you can play it, you can have fun. It may not have all the content that it needs to be complete, but at least it has the minimum amount of content to be called a reasonably okay game, like most people would say a shooter game that lasts 4 hours is short, but it would be a reasonable time spent for a game kit. You also have the documentation, of course, with the game kit, so that's another aspect. So it's a more complete package. It tries to get you into the game. There's a lot of game stuff already there. There are a lot of assets, and if you wanted to, you just change the assets and design new levels and keep the entire gameplay. So that's the game kit for me.
Okay. So what games actually can classify as, if I have a game in App Store and I say, okay, my game is doing okay in the App Store, now I can sell the code on, you know. So does it have to be really complicated? Because I think your line kit was used to create flight control, if I'm correct.
I wish.
It
was inspired by flight control because it was so popular, and I thought, okay, hey, flight control, it's popular, a lot of people will want to make a flight control type game, or at least with the same control scheme. So it makes sense to make a starter kit that models the gameplay and the user input. Yeah, would be cool if my my game was the basis for flight control.
Okay, so I think when you are developing a starter kit or you're selling your code has to be really, really polished and very, very well commented and maybe documented, so that the other person, you know, the developer who is actually using it, can easily understand at what each line of code actually does.
Well, I think that's where most starter kits don't get made, because most developers, after they finish their game, they look at their code and think, "Oh my God, it's just such a mess, and I'm ashamed to even show this code to someone else." And and you just start wondering, "Okay, I would have to refactor this and change that and." Etc. etc. So I think a lot of developers, they have pride in their product, but they feel shame about their own code, which is why they really hesitate and aren't prone to actually releasing the code unless it's free. Because if it's free, it's so easy. You just put it out, no matter how crappy it is. It's just there, and you can always say, "Hey, sorry, it's crappy code. I know that. It's cool." But if you start selling, the expectations that you put on yourself start to climb very high, and I think you have to find the right level. If you have some areas where the code isn't that good, most customers probably won't complain about that. And if it's a bit complicated, then you might want to add a certain short documentation on that part of code to explain it well, maybe in the comments, maybe as a separate document, customers will be able to figure this out. And everything else, you should just react to customer feedback and not worry too much about how great your code is, or how well designed it is, or well structured, etc., etc. The key point here is, if you want to sell your source code, it should do one of two things. One is it should help beginners understand how more complex projects are built, it used to be the prime example for a game like that, or a starter kit like that, is the Sapustong source code, which is no longer in sale because it was bought by Zynga. But the goal of that project, as far as I understand it, is to essentially show Cocos2D users every aspect of the Cocos2D game engine in use in an actual finished game. And for that purpose, it was great. But it's not something that you can build on. It's just going to sell for, the beginners. And it's definitely going to suffer the more documentation becomes available for Cocos2D, obviously. And the other aspect that I try to fulfill with my starter kit is to go in that trying to solve a niche problem, like drawing lines and make this work and be able or allow others to build on that, because it's not trivial code. It's not that complex, at least not for a professional programmer, but it's still a good enough basis to save yourself a couple hours of work. So you have both those. I sell to both users who have little experience and would just like to know how to go about designing a line drawing game. And I have other customers who are experienced, who could easily do it themselves, but they happily pay $100, $200 just to save themselves a week of work, or maybe even more, because especially if you are in a business or a freelancer, and let's say you take a very cheap rate of $20 per hour, and you consider that you... it would take 20 hours for you to implement that type of code. That makes 200 hours that you would have to, that's $200 that you would be, have to be, ah, no, I'm I think you know where I'm heading to. I'm just confused right now. So essentially, you make this calculation: how much time, how much would it cost you to develop it yourself, and how much does it cost? Is it less than I buy it and just learn from the code? And even if I don't use the code, I still have a basis and something I can look up and have something concrete where I see a solution, a working solution.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, sometimes, I mean, you have to look, as you said, that if it's going to take me maybe a week or 40 hours to build the whole thing, and if it's available online for maybe $200, then I can actually buy and this will save me time and money rather than implementing it myself. Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
So starter kits basically, as Stefan pointed out, gets you started with something, and we'll have a link to his line drawing starter kit, which will enable you to start with line drawing games. There are times when you make a game and then you want to push it out on a public repository. Just give it the code for free. Now that is not a starter kit code. That is just like a game, like ABC Pop, like a Desert Race game or Space Demon that is available on GitHub. And there are, I think, many games available. If you go to the CocoaStudio website, I think they give you the source code of games, of many different type of games, or many different kind of, I think, APIs, like a joystick API and all that stuff. So I think people always ask that, how will you benefit, how will I benefit as a developer for giving the source code out for free? So I think the answer to this is you get kind of like the publicity. And recently, like 2-3 days ago, someone emailed me that, hey, if you are interested in implementing our project using iOS, you know, like what is that, CocoaStudio framework, because we saw your code and because we saw your project on GitHub repository or any public place, we saw your code. So sometimes giving away the code of your application, of your game, will land you a much bigger job, you know, or a full-time job. That is how I got in, got the job in the Microsoft community, and I think that's also worked for each and every community. What are your thoughts on that, Stefan?
I think that's absolutely right, and if you well, look at the recent events and ask yourself, why did Sünger hire Ricardo? Well, it's clear, because he made CocoaStudio, and why did it become so popular? Because it was free. So there's definitely value in putting out source code for free for users, and you have to do it, but you have to do it in a sort of with a professional touch, at least. Perfect example, I think, is Ray Vanderlich, who writes tutorials about CocoaStudio and CocoaTouch. And if you go to his website, you immediately get the feeling you just have to see 2 or 3 blog posts and you know this guy knows what he's talking about. He has it under control. He's an expert. And you can actually, if you release your free source code and just don't release the code and say, here it is, okay, do whatever you want, but you actually see it as a marketing effort, a marketing event, sort of, so to speak, and build your website around it, make an extra page on your website, a web page for that project, you will come off as much more approachable for potential, employers. They already see that from a screenshot on your web page. Okay, the project looks reasonably good. I'll have a look at the source code. Source code looks reasonably good. That guy has several such projects online. Hey, he might be the right guy for us, and let's talk to him. So that's how it can go. Personally, I get quite a lot of requests, actually, but the more I get, the fewer I'd like even to consider, because I think for some it may be tempting to say, okay, eventually a big company will hire me, but I've been there, I've done that, and I'm through with it, so to speak. So I'd rather stay independent and do whatever it takes to stay that way.
Yeah, I think if I ever go independent, which might be a long time, I guess. But if I ever go, my main reason will be I don't want to drive to work. That's I just hate
Good point.
driving. Yeah.
I never hated driving, and I did long commutes for a long time, for many years, like 160, 180 kilometers a day. That's both ways, so it's 70 to 890 kilometers. I'm not sure what that is in miles, probably like 50. But it's just time consuming, and it's just waste of time, and also, of course, obviously, a waste of money. And if I see I can work from home, and I can, at any point of time, I can just stop working and do something else, and that's just great. I mean, I'm always available for, well, family or other things, unless I'm really into my work and just don't want to drop it right here. But at work, you always have to consider, have to work around work and have to make plans with doctor's appointments that fit into your schedule or don't, conflict with a meeting or something like that. It's just much more freedom that way. Which also, next point, I mean, maybe we can just grace it at least. The freelancing part. I think a lot of indies at least do some freelancing on the side, which is essentially being employed, but not working at the company directly, at least not in most cases. I think the biggest benefit to freelancing is actually that it brings in money, but other than that, it's essentially like being employed.
Yeah, it helps you, as you said, that it helps you to build your portfolio for your apps. Yeah.
It helps to build your portfolio, but on the other hand, you in some cases you are not allowed to mention that you were involved in that project for a good number of reasons, and most of them are obviously big business kind of reasons, because they want to say they developed this in-house or something like that for whatever reason. And so that's a big bummer. And the other big bummer is read your contracts carefully, and if you don't have a contract, make sure you get one, because there are things that you have to consider, like the code that you work on, that you build, is it yours, and you just license it to them, or does the contract state that the code that you develop for that company or for that employer is actually theirs, copyright-wise, because that changes how you have to develop your code. You have to formally split your code into a library that is for your own use, absolutely just for your own use, that you build alongside of the project that you work on, and you just give away the other code, and at least try to work out that you state that you have a library of a foundation of code that you give away with your projects, but that is not the company's code who you work for. So that's the very least that you should aim for, because other than that, all the code that you develop, you have to throw away and start over with zero. So that's definitely not that something that you should do.
Yeah, I think some companies will go also as far as saying that when you are employed by us, anything you develop anywhere, which means in the office or in your own home using your own personal Mac, will be ours. So
Yeah,
put,
I noticed a contract clause. In my previous employer's work contract, there was the statement, but it went to that effect that any work created in the office or with any office equipment is legally theirs. So if you are really, really, really going down to the details, you could say, hey, you used this pen to write down a note for a game design, so technically this game design is ours. Even if you if you were 1,000 kilometers away and everything else was yours, but the pen was the company's, and maybe you shouldn't have even taken the company's pen in the first place. But you know how this goes. So it's never that. In Germany, we have this saying that it's never cooked as hot as it eat. No, it's never eaten as hot as it's cooked. But you have to be careful, especially if you work for companies or people who you don't know. So some of them may be actual pricks, and you only realize that after it's too late.
Yeah.
Don't work for Lotsus, by the way.
So I think that we have reached the end of the podcast, and we covered quite a lot of details, going from plain old apps store sales, like selling your app, to IaaS advertising, in-app purchasing, selling the source code, as well as freelance work, and you know, if you want to work for magazines, subscriptions, and all that stuff, which comes under in-app purchasing model and upgrades. Do you have any other things to add, Stefan?
Not really. Other than that, maybe I could quickly mention I'm in the middle of the Coco 2D and Coco chapter, and I'm a bit behind, but I think it's developing quite nicely, and we'll have some of the. I'll try to get some in a purchase or something like that in there. At least the iAd stuff. And
When is it scheduled to be released? I mean, do we know the date or anything yet?
Well, my contract is for completion of delivery June 27th, I think. So it's 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks out. I have to have everything done by that date. I mean, it's not that unmovable, but I want to be done by that day and start working on a, well, actually... I have plans for making a game kit this time, so that's what I want to work on and release on the sometime in fall, and develop this alongside with the Cobalt 2D project as well.
Cool. That sounds good. That sounds awesome, actually.
Yeah, yeah, that's why I'm really on a hot seat mode right here, because I have to finish the book. I love working on the book, but I also want to work on the game kit and want to work more on Cobalt 2D, which has been essentially mostly nothing much happened in the past month because I was just too busy. So I hope to finally get this over with and get into this more regular mode of updating Cobalt 2D, working on a game kit, and getting the book out.
All right, cool. Well, I don't think I have anything to add, but I will just say that I'll add all the things that we talk about in the show notes, and you know, I think that's pretty much it. I know it's kind of late over there on your side, and
yeah, it's just past midnight,
and it's kind of very, very hot over here on my side. It's around. I think it's like around 100 or 103 with 90% humidity.
Oh.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, from 9 a.m. in the morning to 7 p.m. at night, you cannot go outside, period. You cannot. Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
So we have to start our cricket game at 5:40 a.m. in the morning now. Yep.
Okay, and, well... Yeah. It's like playing with the chickens, so to speak.
Yep. And we have to end it at like 9:30 because it's just too hot.
Oh, good.
It's just horrible. I mean, the summer is just horrible. But anyway, I think that's pretty much it. So once again, thank you, Stefan Eiterheim, for being on the podcast and talking about all this cool stuff. I'm sure our listeners are going to really enjoy this podcast because this answers most of the questions about the different options that they have for selling their app on the App Store and enjoying the revenue earned from it.
Yeah, thank you, Azam, for having me, and everyone for listening in.
All right, thank you very much. Bye.
Yep, bye.